that you're born an Italian. If you want your life to be great, see that you're born an Italiano and your life will be great.
Hey there, Paisani. Welcome back to another episode of the Italian American Podcast, and happy Italian American Heritage Month. It is October. It is our time to shine. Paint the nation red, white, and green. You know it's my favorite time of the year. I'm John Viola, along with my partner in crime, the notorious POB, the Italian American Wikipedia, Mr. Patrick O'Boyle. And this is part two of a conversation that we hope you enjoyed thoroughly in part one with our friend Brandon Ficarra, talking about everything from comedy and humor and our reflection on ourselves. And
he is a diamond in the diadem. Diadem? Is that the word?
Diadem. Yeah, diadem.
The diadem of Italian America.
Yeah, he certainly is. He's a real gentleman. We really enjoy his company and getting to know him. And
John, you found him. John, you find a lot of great people.
And we're going to cover that in the second half a little bit,
correct.
How him and I got to know each other. It's, of course, it has to do with Lou Monte, Dominic the Donkey, and Pepino the Mouse.
Which are Dolores' favorite.
I know.
I don't think she even listens anymore.
Probably
she never
not.
Comes on. She don't listen.
Right, but she's, you know, she's got a lot going on right now. But this episode is coming out on Thursday, October 5th, so I want to make sure it is the first chance we get to wish everybody happy Italian-American Heritage Month. What a great time in the calendar of Italian-America. And you've heard about it last week. I'm going to remind you again this week. We are 2 days away from the Jersey City Columbus Day Parade. The man of the year, the one and only notorious POB, Patrick O'Boyle. He will be there live and in person.
Going down Newark Avenue.
Yeah. Big, big day.
Yes.
You excited?
Yeah, extreme. It means a lot.
Yeah, I'm terribly sad I'm going to miss it. But
and I want to thank everybody in Jersey City who made it possible, because I lived on that block. My mother lived on that block. My grandparents lived on that block. My great-grandparents lived on that same block. We had our fruit and vegetable store on that block. Yeah, I'm totally tied. Before the departure, before the flight to North Arlington, that was my entire world. And I have tremendous memories, and it's my stop in America, right?
Yeah, yeah.
My grandfather's mother was there. It's
your neighborhood.
We're all there for many generations, yep. And it's not what it was. We're all gone now, but I think it's even more important that we have the Jersey City Columbus Day Parade, because I often say the Italians in Jersey City were like the Lenny Lenape Indians. Everybody knows we were there, but there's very little left to commemorate that we existed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's very important that we remind the new people that came in that we were there and we built the place.
Yeah.
Right? And, yeah, it means a tremendous honor. Like I've said previously, it's the only time I've ever seen my mother impressed with anything in my entire life.
And that
in 48 years. I've never seen anything register with her. And this, because it's Jersey City based.
Is she riding in the parade, your mom?
Yeah, she has to go on the float.
Are you going to be on the podcast? We have our own podcast float, which
I'm on that podcast.
You know how you know we're really in this business? When Brendan got in touch with the float guy, he called me and he said, it's the same float guy that did the float for San Gennaro, and they haven't taken yours apart yet, so they wanted to know if you wanted to just have the... We're like, yeah, sure, it's the same float, right? So now we've been in so many parades, we have a standing float. But are you going to be on the float with our friends and family and listeners, or are you in like a car?
No, I'm going to use a throne.
Said
my
just
brother was in a high school musical and they had a throne back.
Like they're
going
to carry you, like the
no.
Pope?
I was just going to sit there, like I said, I was just going to bless. But I should have done it. It's too late in the game. I should have had a commemorative challenge coin.
Yes, you should have.
And thrown them off the side.
I bet you we can get those. It might not be too late.
We could. I got the design king right here.
I know another test.
But I have to thank Anna. Janet Balsey, I know the two of them advocated for me, and they made this happen, and I am complete. I'm complete in my life. I've reached the mountaintop, because it means, yeah, sure, because I'm going to be past, you know, it does. It's very emotional for me. My great-grandparents are buried in a grave that's right on the same street.
Yeah.
Every night in my life, in the summer, my grandmother would take me by the hand and walk me down to Rand's Ice Cream in Jersey City and got me a hot fudge sundae.
Ah.
I was a fat little boy, and my grandmother's responsible for that. If I had asked her for 10, she would have bought me 10.
Sure.
If she asked me 20, I would have had 20. Yeah. And I remember so often taking me down by the hand, anything I wanted. I'm going to be passing by all those places. You know, happy times, sad times. My cousin died in that. There's so many things that will be connected to there. And I've always had a love, right, for where I come from in a Jersey City sense. You know, I grew up in North Arlington. That's my home. But I always have a connection with there. And it means a lot. Like I said, it's the first time my mother's been ever been impressed. And she said to me, I almost keeled over, really. Like, she goes, you know, if only your grandparents and my aunts were here, you know, my grandmother's sisters and stuff. But, yeah, that's it. So come.
Yeah.
Is Ro going to come?
Yeah, everybody's going. I'm the only one going to miss
you.
Yeah.
That's all right. It's not your choice. I know. It's not you, John. You got to keep domestic tranquility.
I know. But I hope our listeners come. If you're out there and you're in the area.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah.
Listen, life is short. Whoever thought that wacky COVID thing was going to pop a bubble. You know, you never know what's.
And we're going to
teach people that you got to enjoy today. I don't know what will.
No, I hope they do. And we're going to do a dinner.
Yeah, come afterwards. We're going to have refreshments afterwards. You want to bring cookies? We should have had an Italian wedding where they put the big basket.
That's what we should have done.
Everybody brings their own basket
of cookies to you in tribute.
Yeah, sure.
That's what you should throw. It's challenge cookies.
I should throw gunvieta.
That's a good idea, actually.
I should have blue gunvieta. Hey, here you go.
That's a very good idea.
She could put this, you know, with cut and paces and put the basket on the other one. If you want to come bring baskets, bottles of homemade wine.
Yeah, bring some gifts for the man.
They have to bring me gifts.
The man of the year.
Wedding, the Italian.
We'll all enjoy
it. What do you call that wedding? The football wedding.
Yeah. This is going to be like a version. So I hope everybody comes out and enjoys. And hope you guys enjoy this second part of a great episode. And
we're gonna fantastic episode.
Jump right in. Fantastic episode. Great conversation with a great friend. And we're going to jump right in. Yeah, I find it interesting to think that you were doing shows out there, you know, with other Italian-American comedians for primarily an Italian-American audience because, you know, I've come a long way on this idea of portrayals of Italian-Americans, right? Like, I grew up in a era where I was in high school and going to a lot of these, like, Italian-American meetings and foundations, and I found NIAF, and the big thing was to be anti-Sopranos, right? Mm-hmm. And it was offensive to portray, and like, you know, we're going to project this image that, you know, yes, the mafia is only 0.0001%, and it's all true, right? And it was only when I met my wife, who grew up in a very Italian neighborhood in the Bronx, who loved the show, her whole family loved the show, and she said to me, like, you got to watch this, because, like, I wrote it off, right? I wrote off this idea, like, if it's an offensive, and it's not even necessarily the portrayal, but the theme, the patina of the mafia, like I didn't want to go near it. And I've kind of come around as I've gotten older to this idea that, like, you have to take everything for what it's worth. And I remember when I first got to NIAF, this amazing 4-part documentary series that John Maggio made on the Italian Americans was traveling around the community looking for community institutions to raise the last, like, $75,000 they needed to finish this film, which was a huge success on PBS. And I met with them because I was new and I was young, and I didn't have the institutional knowledge. And they basically said to me, like, every other group has thrown us out of the room because we are going to include in this documentary organized crime as an issue. And, you know, it's not the whole thing, but it's going to be in there. And basically they all said to them, like, we're not going to support this film, even though it's going to be, you know, 4 beautiful hours on the entirety of the Tamarack experience if it has the mafia in there. And I decided to help them raise a little bit of money. They showed me the film before it was released, and I thought, this is exactly why you can't shut down when you get offended, because every other group was missing out on the opportunity to be a part of something. We may not have actually seen it come to fruition, and it was a beautiful, amazing 4 hours, and, you know, maybe 20 minutes of it was uncomfortable, but it was something also, you know, real that had happened. And we do ourselves a disservice when we shut down when we're offended by portrayals. It's okay to be offended, but you have to then integrate it, and you have to acknowledge it, and you have to deal with it. And I think that that's really, really important. And I think that's important in, it was like the 80s, you talk about Eddie Murphy's, one of his great sets from his meteoric rise. And he does this little bit about Italians coming out of Rocky
That happened.
Yeah, I'm sure it did, real. Right? Yeah. And, like, it's, you know, it's not like the most flattering version of Italian-Americanism that you could picture, but I don't begrudge Eddie Murphy for doing that, right? Like, I don't think you have to have tribal rights to talk about other groups. I think you have to be thicker-skinned, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that there's a, you know, look, the, you know, the mafia was a thing. It existed, right? And it touched a lot of communities.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
And, you know, I get crucified by some people for saying this. A lot of Italian Americans cooperated.
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
well.
I mean, in the sense that when somebody with dirty money, because they were in that profession, came and wanted to have throw their kid's wedding at your catering hall, your mm-hmm. daughter's wedding, and they blew an astonishing amount of money. They weren't there saying, oh, gee, I don't want his money. I know where it came from.
Right.
Right. So what I'm trying to say is this truth, right? Yes, we had people who fought the mafia, people who refused to deal with them. They came to the our store in Jersey City, the fruit and vegetable store. My grandma told me the story. And they came and said, listen, they were going to buy rotten fruit, like fruit that had gone bad, and sell it to the hospitals in Jersey City. That was an inside deal. My great-grandfather threw them out of the store, right? But I'm saying there's other people who took that deal.
Sure.
Right? I'm trying to do virtual signaling here. But I'm saying, like, we invent these pristine, you know, they were bad yeah. guys and they were a minority and it wasn't all of us. But, you know, it's a black and white. It's a story we portray black and white. And there's a lot of gray.
Yeah. Like everything.
But I think most people, you know, the majority of Italian Americans, especially in you know, major cities where organized crime existed, what, you know, they just wanted to get to their job the next day. They didn't want to. So when things were happening yeah. or things were going on, or if somebody was coming to their catering hall, it's like, yeah, just take the money because yeah. it's easier. I don't want to offend this person because yeah. I don't need that. You
yeah,
know?
Exactly. Yeah.
So I think that there was a lot of, like, not so much. I'm sure some people, like, you know, there was, like, you know, some people who cooperated with them and worked with them and benefited. But I think most people just tried to stay out of the way.
Yes.
Sure. But the reason I bring that up is that we as a community love to whitewash things. So my thing is that, sure, like everybody ran numbers, number running was everywhere, and gambling and stuff like that. And that's part of who our history is, right? So I'm trying to say is, like you said, a lot of people either, you know, looked the other way, minded their business. Like my grandmother used to say, well, why do people care? The only people who get involved, the only people who have problems are the people who volunteer to get involved. But what I'm trying to say is that it's like we can't make believe like this didn't happen,
right?
Right. And that's my argument. It's like it never happened.
And the deeper conversation is why, because it's not like only Italian Americans made The Godfather successful,
right?
Or Sopranos. Like these things are wildly successful, yeah. you know, across all demographics.
Yeah.
So what is attractive about it? You know, it's our relationship with power, with yeah. violence, with crime. You know, like that's why was Billy the Kid a celebrity? You know,
right.
instead of just. It's why, you know, and I don't know that I don't have answers. I just have questions. But,
so we,
you know, it's they're worried about that portrayal. Well, why are they portraying the Sopranos, Italian Americans, and they're offended by that? The deeper question is why isn't, you know, something, a story about an Italian American architect
right.
interesting?
Right.
Like, why isn't that, why don't people want to see that?
Yes.
But we want to see people, the blood and the guts and the gore. And I don't know. I mean, that requires people smarter than probably the three of us. Maybe not Patty's. definitely you and I. But I not to switch gears, but I've been staring at it the whole time. Pat has his wallet on the table, and I want a ruler.
It's a Costanza wallet.
It's that is the thickest wallet.
I used to have two. You know, I have one now. I have a second wallet.
It's
I try
insane.
To reform my life.
I don't even have. I have like a thing, a little clip.
Because you're a modern and advanced person.
That's really small.
See, because you're with it. You're,
I have a pretty thick wallet,
look,
too,
look at my wallet. Number one, I have two wallets. I have a wallet with two EpiPens, AviQ.
Okay, well, that's...
And, but no, I'm going to explain. There's more to it. And
yeah,
I had the normal wallet, but I have a pocket with a scapula. I have like a religious pocket with my religious saint cards, paraphernalia, dead relatives in that one, right?
Right.
That's half of the wallet there. Then I have my PBA cards because I'm from New Jersey.
Yeah,
you have to get pulled
it's a
over.
Big plus.
That's all parachutes,
yep.
right? I have 5,000 credit cards. I have like a Costco card,
yep.
restaurant. I have all those cards. So that makes a big wallet. But I have a scan. I have everything in there. If I ever get stuck on a desert island, it's
you'll
like,
survive.
I'm like a Boy Scout.
Yes.
But this is the one. You should have seen. You know what? The next time we get to that, I'm gonna bring the other wallet out.
Okay.
So I've been trying to get, because when people said, what is it, two wallets he has? Look at my money.
And says, I know it said I'd never come
this.
Back, but now,
now you're
back in.
Look at this.
It's absurd is what
it's absurd. Have, here's the PBA card.
It's actually a very disorganized wallet.
Order
I
police.
Never saw you open it like that.
It's,
well, I mean, what? Because when I had two wallets, it was more organized. I used to carry two wallets.
Now, if you were to get mugged, there's no recreating this.
No.
You couldn't
That's just, it's
no.
over. You just,
no.
You just tell him. Pull the trigger.
What
right.
saints do I have in this one? Let's see who we got here.
And
I got Marona Romanda. She's here. I got a business card of mine. Someone else wrote the back on. I think I have. No, this is a religiously like my other one. I have Santa Rosalie in here. have I'm Catholic. If I get in a car accident, make sure I have last rites. Hey, why don't you end this? This is here.
Do you
this
think
is
they'll
my...
find that before they
No way, not there.
Here on the back of this is, I am a Catholic. In the event of an accident, please call a priest.
Could you imagine?
Monastery of the Precious Blood, Watertown, New York.
God forbid you were incapacitated. Imagine the guy who opens that wallet to try to figure out who you are. That's it's like one of those snakes that comes out of the peanut can.
Just I didn't see my wallet. I'm now saying, wow, is it that complicated? The other,
it's
I
a
should
lot of
bring
stuff.
Out the other wallet that I have medals in. I got the stuff that Italian old ladies pin on their brassiere. With the safety pin.
It comes with
keep
you.
The horns off.
You got everything you need.
I got a St. Benedict medal that's impressed into a holy card. But see, that's the stuff I worry about.
Well, you know what? It's good to have. You've got the protections.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I like this Santa Rosa. This is a nice car.
No, see what I did?
Yeah, well, he's going
down memory lane.
Well, while he's doing that, I want to I'll say to the rest of the audience, I just want to touch on one thing because it's very definitive, and I don't want to go too deep into it because I...
Why not? This is two episodes.
No, I just don't want to share details. Of
we'll just beep it out.
No. But the thing that brought us together, that introduced us to one another, me and Brandon, and then Pat afterwards, is a shared love and I think great hopefulness for the creations of, at least put to voice by Lou Monti, but really the characters that occurred in a lot of his stuff, Dominic the Donkey, Peppino the Mouse, we met through our shared interest in that. What we find a lot of people argue back and forth. I've encountered a lot of Italians who, one guy in particular, I'll never forget, saying to me, like, I was telling him how much I loved Peppino the Mouse and it meant to me as a kid. And he said, this is not the kind of stuff we need to share with the next generation. We need to share opera with them.
I know who that is.
You do know who that is, yeah. But, you know, we've been talking about it on the show. Like, Dolores always says she finds Dominic the Donkey offensive, and
really,
yeah, she finds it.
You should lock her
reductive.
Up in a cage
like,
one
it's
day
not,
and
it's
play
not,
it
it's
all.
Not, it's not like noble enough of a representation. But you've pursued these things, and you've put a lot of time and effort into these characters. What drew you to this? What did they mean to you?
A lot. I think mainly it's Dominic's nobility. You know, he's a little happy little donkey.
Yep, of course.
You know, Dominic specifically captured my imagination because the story, mind you, coming from, I'm a comedian, so I love it on its surface if it's a wonderful, joyous little Christmas song.
Yeah.
The comedian in me also loves that, like, the story is like, it's like you ever been in a restaurant and there's a table seeming to have an interesting conversation, but you're only catching bits and pieces.
Yeah.
That's what the lyrics of Dominic the Donkey are like.
Wow.
Because it doesn't really give you, it's like it zooms out for like,
yeah.
Why can't the reindeers get over there?
Yeah,
they
yeah.
can fly. They can't get over there. Yeah. There's got to be something there. There's a story to that. You know, why did Santa need Dominic's help?
Yeah.
And so little of it is explained. And I find that to be what's wonderful is it allows your mind
yeah.
to kind of wander. So I actually, you know, started writing up like what that story might be.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of led you and I together. But no, I think that those songs, they're fun, they're cute, and it's, look, everything doesn't have to be an epic.
Yeah.
Epic tale of like, you know, like there's a lot of nobility in Italian people. And there's also, thank goodness, a lot of silliness.
Yes.
And it's the silly from an Italian perspective, that I think Lou Monti and you know the writers we know Donna
yeah Brown, George Brown and yep
yeah like you know her parents captured the silliness from a uniquely Italian American perspective.
Yeah, I think you're right,
and I think that's what I because it sounds like something you know a great uncle would have come up with.
Yes, that's
you know
true.
And you know told a story about. So that's, you know, I think I embrace silliness. I don't think there's anything more noble than the ability to be silly. So
that's
whoever said it wasn't noble enough. Tell them they need to get silly.
We're going to bring Dolores next time. You know, that's something we got to do now that we're recording here in Jersey.
I think she plays it when we're not there.
You think she plays the song?
Yeah.
I don't know, but every time, you know, I'm her son's godfather, so every time I see him, I play Lou Monte so that he falls for it. I hope he falls for it. That's my goal. But I'm just trying to get it sneaking
for two
in the
reasons.
House.
One, it's awesome.
Yeah. One, it's
two,
awesome. Two, it's yes. Sorry, Kumava Negan. I listen to it every Christmas. But I think you're absolutely right. I think that like being silly does not diminish our serious accomplishments or the nobility of our character or our social experience. I think silly is I think people are attracted to that, and that's what draws me. You know, the light stuff, humor, comedy, silliness. It's a safe place to be, right? It feels good, and it's cozy, and it's like a warm blanket in the winter, and I just love that. So my hope is, first and foremost, you and I and Pat get a lot more time working together on these wonderful, silly, endearing characters and other great projects. But also, now that we're in Jersey, we got to get Donna Brown out here to talk about the history of those songs. We got to.
Oh, yeah.
She's
such a wonderful woman.
Oh, what a great
really
lady.
We spent some time with her.
Yeah.
And she was just
I regret that I was not there for
that. Yeah,
yeah. She would have loved you.
Yeah, she would have, yeah.
But who wouldn't?
Thank you, man.
And I mean that. And you know what's funny? We were talking earlier about comedians. Like, if he just went backstage at, like, any comedy club anywhere in the country and just said he was a comedian and, like, just never went up on stage and just hung out, no one would bat an eye.
No.
He would fit in. You would fit in that culture. You're just damaged enough.
Wow!
Because you have to be.
You got to be damaged.
You got to be smart.
Yeah.
But you got to be damaged.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, you would be like everybody would just assume you're great. You'd get bookings.
Really?
Just from never going and say just hanging out in the back. 100%. 100%.
This is exciting. Thank you very much.
You would be a good comic, actually. Now that I think about it.
And we can do it. I'll book a show, either up here or in the city. And you'll just come hang out with me as a comedian.
Should do that.
Undercover.
Somebody asked me.
It'd be like George
Plimpton.
Right?
Who's that?
Who's George Plimpton?
The writer from...
did the Paper Lion? Or
yeah, he's a commentator. He also wrote for a magazine. I can't remember which magazine now.
He was a writer. So basically you like pretended to be he's on the Detroit Lions and did a handful of other things where like kind of day in the life stuff where he'd impersonate.
Great writer.
I would kind of, just show up and do the thing.
We should do this, John.
Somebody asked me about that.
Could you take me one of these things?
Yeah, we'll go.
We went to go see Debbie Gibson. That was, I asked John for these things. Yeah, I'll take you there.
Deborah,
yeah.
She is a woman,
there's
Pat.
There's nobility.
And you'll refer to her.
Let's not be silly here.
See, you get it because we're the same age. You appreciate her.
I met her at a multi-level marketing thing in the early 2000s. Not kidding.
Did you talk
music
to her?
Related. Oh, yeah, yeah.
She's a class act.
Introduces
She's the standard Deborah. Bearer of our people.
She's wonderful.
She's
yeah,
half
she's great.
Sicilian. Right?
Montel Jordan as well.
The mother's definitely Italian from Long Island. I mean, there's no...
Yeah.
That's why I was always proud of her, because she was like the Gen X standard bearer for Italian America. She was our people. That's why I keep preaching her.
She was also your big crush growing up.
Yeah, cause she's our people. I have to defend her. She was our people. And I finally have someone here in my age bracket that represents it, because... She was an Italian-American. Alyssa Milano was, too.
Yes.
You know, I mean, she's
who I worked with on My Name is Earl.
Today.
You
sorry?
Did?
I worked with Alyssa Milano.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think she identifies as Italian-American?
She did, I don't...
Whatever that means.
We didn't have a conversation about it. But I think it would be impossible for her not to, based on... Just talking with her, she feels...
She's an Italian girl from Brooklyn, right?
Exactly. She feels like... she's not trying to hide any of that.
You know, you're talking about
well,
comedy.
Who's the boss? That's
what I was just going to say.
The whole thing, Who's the Boss was Tony Danza portraying the Italian in the Connecticut WASPy household.
I've been, obsessing lately over TV, because I'm a TV fanatic. My poor daughter, she's going to be two.
Can I tell people a John secret?
What?
John loves junk food.
Yes,
loves junk
food. Yeah.
Loves junk food and TV.
Yes. I could easily spend the entirety of my life had I not gotten married in a basement watching reruns. Like, my favorite thing to
do... If you didn't get married, How much would you weigh right
a
now?
A lot. A ton. I would be, yeah, I would let
that
myself,
combination.
Yes.
Is
I would be. Oh,
not good for.
Could easily. I mean, I'm not at my fighting.
You look at mine,
shape.
You're a slim.
I'm getting. You
know, definitely, you know.
My wife calls me skinny fat because I got like a big gut. But
that's
I'm like my grandfather.
Well,
I have the macaroni gut. It's a macaroni
no,
gut.
No, that's not. Skinny you fat tough. Is.
Tell Nicole put that gun back in the holster. I got combated. defense you now. You're very careful what you want. Does not skinny fat.
I could be better, but I love junk.
I don't like the idea of skinny fat.
No,
well, no. It's like if you're not going to be fat, like I don't want to. Well, you're slightly untoned.
Exactly.
Who's
right.
The, who's either the person you, judging
correct.
This?
It's right. Just my wife. Correct. But I will say, I love TV, and my favorite thing to do growing up, my dad used to take my brothers and I, amongst my many favorite things. One of the things I loved was he would take us into the city. This is before the internet. And there is the Museum of Television and Radio. And it's right next to what used to be the 21 Club, 51st or something like that, 51st Street. And back then, when everything was on VHS, you would go and you would go through there like, I don't even know how you describe it. I remember the old green computer screens with the little flashing, like white, like, you know, you had like the turtle. It was like green screen computers that were not, like the interface was still very rudimentary.
Sure.
You'd go into their database and you could search out the archive that they had of television and radio. So, you know, because there was no internet, because there was nothing on demand, a lot of these shows, if they weren't airing anymore, they weren't in syndication, you hadn't seen them in a long time. So it wasn't like today where you can buy every episode and look it up. It's on YouTube, whatever. And I used to go with my dad, and for whatever, I forget the donation you had to make, you'd get, I think it was 2 hours in a pod, in big leather office chair like this, and a tube television with a headset that attached. And you'd give them the numbers, you'd write down the numbers on a slip, and you'd hand them to them, and whatever added up to 2 hours, they would then just play it on the screen for you, like one after the other. And I'd watch old reruns, or it was the first time I ever saw the Dean Martin comedy roast, and I would just watch everything. And I relished those days. And the reason I bring that up is now, you talk about Alyssa Milano and Who's the Boss. Who's the Boss is one of the few shows, which I can't understand why, you actually can't access every season of that digitally. You can get the first season you can buy on the iTunes store, and I think there's another, like Sony Crackle or something, has like random episodes, but there's no way to access the entirety of that show. And I...
Problem for you.
It's a big problem for me, because I think that may be, in my lifetime, the great Italian-American show. Ray Romano, I didn't watch, right? But Who's the Boss?
I think Who's the Boss, for our time period, he represents... But you know what used to bother me about that show? He was in the servant position.
Hmm.
Right? I go, oh, what can the Italian from Brooklyn do? He can be the housekeeper.
That never
bothered
me. No, but it was the fish out of water.
It was the gender
thing. It was
thing.
The fact that that was... That's
they
funny.
Didn't have as the CEO. We didn't have Dallas. You know? They didn't have Italian. No, really.
No.
Why didn't we have an Italian Dallas? Why did the Italian from Brooklyn, he's gonna go clean the white, you know. And it's not a male-female thing. It's like, oh, the wasp from Connecticut. She's the CEO. And then Vinnie Boombatz is going to clean your bathroom.
I don't know. That doesn't bother me. And I think that that's...
That did bother me.
And I think it's
me.
Really indicative of the time, of the era. I think it's... But I love that I love
show. You're never going to see a brain surgeon on TV that sounds like Tony Danza. And that bothers
that's
me.
That's true.
But if you ever... But wait a second. Let's say you required brain surgery tomorrow and he sounded like Tony Danza, the guy checking out.
You know what?
I'd
rather
die
under the knife with my own people. I'd rather take that bullet. Because you know what? My whole life, because of the way I sound, I was put on the back of the intellectual bus.
That's true.
I want to die under the knife of an Italian surgeon that sounds you here. Because why? Why? He couldn't go to what? Unless he sounds like
Tony Danza in that character doesn't sound like... a normal Italian American guy. He sounds like a.
Well, they got to play it up.
Yeah,
you know. And then Golden Girls had an Italian, had two Jews playing an Italian.
That's true.
Did you know that they want? What was the woman who played Sophia?
Estelle Getty.
Estelle Getty.
Do you ever this? I had read somewhere. Don't ask me where. Estelle Getty. I guess that was her first really big break, and it came in the later part of her life.
Yes, that's true.
And she was afraid that she was not going to be able to portray an Italian well, and she had argued, I guess, with the producers. That they should change Bea Arthur and her roles to be a Jewish mother and daughter, but they were both Jews from Brooklyn because they knew how to play that because it was
right.
You know,
so
tribal
life.
Rights.
Yeah.
But I think she did. I think she did a. I mean,
why'd they tell her no?
I don't know. I mean, she did. I think she did a bang up job.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think she did a pretty. You know, there was certain. I think she played a good Sicilian.
I do too.
But she was. She didn't have the same. You knew. You. She did a good job. But Tony Danza was one of us.
No, Tony Danza, and Tony Danza integrated a lot of like Italian American character actors from that era in, and bring people from the neighborhood up to Connecticut. And I think as somebody who lived that experience, moving from Italian Brooklyn to suburban New Jersey, in this case, not Connecticut, the show really spoke to me. So I think for my lifetime, it is my favorite glimpse, because all of these things are just lenses into our social experience. So the idea that he was there as a domestic aide or whatever, domestic service in the early to mid, I guess mid to late 80s, whatever it is, I think that that says something about who we were then, both to ourselves and to the rest of the world. And I've been rigorously pursuing, and I may just have to go to the Museum of Television and Radio and go out on a limb, because there's actually shows, I'm finding out now, there was a show called The Super, 1972, Richard Castellano, who most people will remember from Godfather. He played Clemenza, the adult Clemenza, right? Bruno Kirby plays the younger one in Godfather 2. But apparently, I didn't know this, he had had a star turn in a dramatic movie, and was a very accomplished actor and a very well-respected actor. And so in 1972, on the heels of the success of Archie Bunker and All in the Family, Rob Reiner, who's on Archie Bunker at that point, right? Plays the son-in-law, goes and writes a pilot for a sitcom called The Super, where they're going to invert the Archie Bunker dynamic, and it's going to be about an Italian family, this guy who's a super in a building in the Lower East Side. And I'm finding now the only even like writing I could find about it is it was written up in TV Guide and all these TV magazines, different newspapers put out. I've collected a bunch of them from around the country as like a surefire hit. So 1972 is like right on the heels of the Italian-American Civil Rights League, Columbo. Like we're in this kind of ascendancy of awareness, right? 1971 is the great New York Times piece, The Red, White, and Greening of America. And the show bombed. It was a summer replacement, I guess the way they scheduled it, whatever. I think 9 out of the 11 or 12 episodes filmed actually aired, and I'm dying to see.
We got to find that.
What was this show that was supposed to be like the next Archie Bunker?
Would the Museum of Television and Radio have that?
If anybody's going to have it, maybe
ABC.
You
searched YouTube, yeah.
I searched YouTube?
Because I found my buddy Jimmy Brogan had the one, and he's a brilliant comedian, wonderful human being. He did a spinoff of Happy Days, the only like super non-successful one called Out of the Blue, where he played like a guardian angel. It was like right after like Mork worked.
Yeah.
And they did the
Laverne
another
and Shirley
comedian.
Spun off of that, yeah.
Laverne and Shirley, Joni Loves Chachi wasn't super popular, but lasted for a little while. But Out of the Blue was like this guardian angel thing. And it was only like 8 or 9 episodes and I found it on YouTube.
It is October, and that means it's Italian American Heritage Month. And this year, why not connect to Italy with the Mediaset Italia subscription? Mediaset Italia is the channel that combines the best from top Italian channels Canale 5, Italia 1, and Rete 4, so you don't miss the latest in TV from Italy. This October, Mediaset has familiar favorites and new series, including the new crime drama Maria Corleone, airing Fridays at 8:35 p.m. Eastern, brand new current affairs program E Sempre Carta Bianca with Bianca Berlinger, and new seasons of popular favorites Caduto Libera, Quarto Grado, and Pomeriggio Cinque. There's always something new on Mediaset Italia, so call your local television provider today.
Can I tell you something? Know the power of this podcast?
Yeah.
Somebody out there knows.
Maybe.
And needs to get in touch with us.
I hope so. If you do, please let us
somebody,
know.
Somebody out there has an idea.
I've only found a brief snippet of the intro, like, you know, the musical intro that they used to do back in the 70s and 80s. And I guess there's another show called Joe and His Sons or Joe and Sons, where they, this is probably like the late 70s, where Castellano got a chance to be cast as like an Italian-American family, and one of the sons was Bruno Kirby, who was actually Italian-American as well.
Was he? That was my question. I was going to ask if Bruno Kirby was
Italian. He was Italian, and he was, I forget his real name, but he plays his son. So they both play different age of Clemenza.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and that didn't last. That lasted even less than the Super.
I always loved Vincent Gardenia.
I bet if they would have made it a mafia show, it would have been.
That's the sad truth, but you're probably
that's
right.
That's the sad truth.
It's probably true. I mean, it's fine. You know, it's like the humor too, but you're right. Like,
think about the disaster that The Sopranos would have been had it been on network television.
I don't. Yeah, I'm not a big enough fan.
It could have been. He was pitching it.
Yeah, it was supposed. That's what I'm
yeah,
saying.
It's supposed
like,
to be, right?
It, all whatever, the networks. Whatever passed. Your feelings on the Sopranos are, and it's complicated for time, but I think, and I'm like, again, I'm not from the this industry in any sense, but as a layperson, I think that they just it was spectacularly put out. Now, granted, it hit home with me because I live here.
Yeah.
Right. It's I live in the midst of Soprano land, but yeah, I mean, I think that if they had been, their hands would have been tied. If they had, you know, I think it would have been like a very. I don't think it would have lasted two episodes because they could not have portrayed the whole kit and caboodle. I don't even know where that phrase comes from. But, had they not had the freedom of HBO, but to get back to Archie Bunker. Vincent Gardenia was a Scunamiti, I think was
yes.
the last name, from, yeah. who was a Neapolitan, who also winds up being the father in Moonstruck. Mm-hmm. I thought he did. And I think if you ask me for all the Italian portrayals of Italian America on television in the 70s and 80s, the one I like the most, the one I feel the most comfortable with, is his portrayal of the Italian neighbor on Archie Bunker.
See, I've never watched it enough to know.
Oh, it's fantastic. He brings a panettone. It's like Archie Bunker. He brought a panettone over one Christmas and he goes to kiss Archie. Like, what is it with you Italians? Like you men kissing men. I think Gardenia was being Gardenia, really. I don't think it was the because sometimes I think Italian American actors weigh it on heavier because I think that's what's expected.
Yeah.
I think he was being him.
Yeah.
And I think that was the same portrayal that he had in Moonstruck.
Yeah. His authenticity comes out in that a lot. I mean,
he was a Neapolitan, and I think that's I think his Neapolitanness. He was born in Naples. I think he came here as a young child. That Neapolitanness comes through very clearly in his portrayal as the Italian neighbor in Archie Bunker.
I gotta watch those episodes where he's in it. I gotta make a point to
you
see.
You know,
that.
I've also been going back through All the Family.
Have you?
Such a good. It's still every bit. You could put that out.
Yeah.
Right now, and it's absolutely relevant. In some ways, that's a shame.
Yeah, yeah, that's
because
true.
You'd think, like, from 71, 72,
yeah.
like, things would have progressed a little more societally. But it's still razor sharp and hilarious.
And nobody seems to get offended by that show, even though its whole premise is offensive, right?
I'm sure people did. You know, Norman Lear did that show, and also, you know, Jefferson's.
Did a lot, yeah.
Yeah. He had a really fantastic way of, you know, I think people, look, there's people who get offended at things, right? But then there's people who make decisions to avoid that.
Yeah.
And I think those decisions are always further away from what would actually offend.
Yeah.
So when somebody has the guts to do something that could be offensive to someone,
yeah.
usually people tend to respect it more than get offended. Because it's like, you know, it's. I think we sell people short.
Yeah.
Like networks will make decisions or streaming services anywhere in Hollywood. There's nothing less creative than decision makers on the business side of Hollywood.
That makes sense, yeah.
It's just what's going to make us the most money without, what's the least amount of risk?
Yeah.
You know, in all areas. We don't care if it's good. We don't, just less risk. But when people do take those risks, I think that, most people are smart, and we see things for what it is. And you see Archie Bunker, they're not portraying the Archie Bunker character as a hero, right? But they're also not portraying him as a villain. They're portraying him as a guy who actually exists that sees the world in this way. Like, there was a billion Archie... There was an Archie Bunker in everybody's family at this table.
Sure.
100% and unequivocally.
Absolutely.
And millions of other families.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then you go to the Jeffersons. And what do they have? They have George Jefferson be kind of like Archie.
Yeah.
He's a little racist towards other
yeah,
people.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's and to me, it's that's...
Do you know George Jefferson? The Jefferson was a huge hit in Italy. Huge.
Really?
Is that right?
Yes. My friend Michela Corti, who's my our age, who grew up in Italy in those days. She came to America as an exchange student in her 20s and fell in love with this country and never left. She told me the Jeffersons were huge in Italy. Dubbed in you know, I guess the 70s and 80s. And I asked her why. She said because...
Talk with her hands.
It was Mother Jefferson.
His mother.
Wheezy?
His mother.
Oh, really?
His mother's despisement of Wheezy as a daughter-in-law, not good enough for her son.
How about that?
And I said to myself, yeah, her son was the prince.
Yeah.
She's the mother who
Relatable.
Suffered. Look at how much I suffered. She said that Mother Jefferson was the anchor of that show in Italy.
That's so interesting. I think that, like, I mean, I would love us to do a series in the future on portrayals and really dig down, really a video series, because, you know, you can only talk about these things so much without actually showing the content. Like, to me, I think everything in my mind comes down to a documentary, but there's a documentary here about the portrayals of Italian Americans and what it says, and everything from, you know, if you think about some of the early silent films there about the Black Hand and, you know, life with Luigi in the 40s, this kind of stuff. But I think the accomplishments that we have as humorists, as comedians, as actors, as writers, I do think that they, at their best, can be a great tool for an inward-looking approach to who we are. You know what's been on my mind lately, too, talking about TV? One of my favorite shows growing up was Alf, right? The alien that comes down from planet Melmac. And I've, of course, been reading about that. And the guy who wrote it, created it, and voiced Alf is Italian-American, this guy Fusco. And I started to think to myself, I'd like to rewatch that. And I think Alf's humor is very Italian-American. I think it's very like that kind of break your chops, a little bit of sarcasm, fish out of water thing. I'm going to rewatch that from an Italian-American perspective and see if I can. I don't know, something about it. I'm like, is this maybe, without it actually being a portrayal, in some ways inspired by?
Yeah, well, I mean, how could it not be if the writer's Italian? Like, so the Meatballs of Comedy, there were points where we did shows for, like, you know, bigger shows for, like, the Italian-American organizations. And, like, I would actually get asked, like, well, can you just do, like, more, like, stuff about being Italian? And that always kind of annoyed me, because my act isn't, like, you know, but I have things about family, I have things about my perspective, and it's like, but everything is coming from that perspective.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, I don't understand. Like, that, it's like saying, well, you're going to make an Italian car. Can you, like, you know, like, put, like, the Italian, make it
right,
red,
right, put
green,
the flag everywhere.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like, well, it doesn't, it's coming from the mind and hands of that person. So I'm sure it is.
You're right. It's like everything essentially comes from where it comes from if you relate to this Italian-American experience. Like, I remember my dream was always to have a variety show at the NIAF Gala weekend, because they used to do, like, a concert, and, you know, I always felt it was a little slow, and I thought if we could do like a variety show where we had some comedians, some music, some different, you know, components. And I hired, this is like right as Sebastian Maniscalco was coming out, and I hired a guy to come named Joe Matarese. And he came down, and we really didn't, you know, do too much, like, kind of exchange of what the event was, whatever. He was there for the beginning of the show with other stuff, and he came out and did a set. And the reaction was, like, a little muted. And when he came off, he said, you know, I really wish I could have seen this once beforehand and then done my set. I would have done a very different set. And I think what he was expressing to me was kind of that same thing. Like, I think he thought, I'm going to an Italian event. Let me just do, like, stuff on being Italian. And he didn't appreciate that the room, at least in this case, was there kind of to hear about anything, but from our perspective, right? Like, that was the advantage he had. It was like that shared perspective. So you could dig deeper into other stuff. I think that's what he was expressing to me at the end. And I've always had a lot of people approach me, even recently, like, you know, we do the IFL in Florida. We have a very young...
Still waiting on my booking.
Yeah, well, as I was talking about...
Yeah, you should come down.
Everybody keeps saying to me, like, why don't we do a comedy night, or why don't we do a comedy night at San Gennaro now that we're sponsoring and running the stage? And I think that from that experience, I have this fear, like, is there room for an Italian-American comedy night, and is there enough of an audience left? I don't know.
No, but you hit it out of the park. You're a comedian that's work comes from an Italian-American well, right? So you don't need to brand yourself. And I love that approach, because you don't need to say, here's a T-shirt, right? Because if you've got Instagram and stuff now, there's a lot of ethnicities that have ethnic comedians.
Right.
But they're very, like, boxed. You know what I'm trying to say? Yeah. Like, you know, it's very, like, okay. And I see this especially with a lot of more of foreign anglophonic, Italian anglophones in other countries. Where, okay, well, this is the Italian ethnic month. It's the same thing over and over and over. Like, how many jokes do you have the grandmother in the house dress or that little apron thing? And, you know, it's like the meatball jokes going over and over. And, you know, I just think that you exhaust it because you're playing to a script as compared to a free flow of who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, we definitely should bring it down to IAFL.
I think we should do an Italian-American comedy night somewhere. I really do.
But this is what I'm saying to you. Do you need to, if you have an Italian-American comedian, right, do you need to call it an Italian? Now,
Meatballs of comedy.
Right, the meatballs of comedy. If you put everybody on the stage and say, okay, well, they're all Italian-American.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying
right,
that's a,
Yeah.
That's what I mean by an Italian-American comedy night. A showcase of Italian-American talent.
I mean, if you take it's one of the albums that you have, the one that was done in East Harlem in the 70s.
Right? Oh, the Manhattan Special album.
Manhattan Special album. It would be a very limited amount of people who would get those punchlines today because all the dirty words are in Neapolitan.
Yeah.
You'd have to do like a simulcasted translation because
they
say something in English and then the dirty punchline comes in Neapolitan. I don't even know if I should talk about it. Did you ever hear this online? There was a comedy routine that was produced in Newark in the, I guess, the 30s. It was an album. And it was so, because the people of North Newark are from Irpinia, from Avellino, right? It was a parody of a guy in the first ward of Newark in the 30s. And it's an Italian-American guy who's parodying a guy in the neighborhood. And the language in Neapolitan, it is the, it's cursing.
In the 30s.
It is cursing. See, in Neapolitan, the Italian word for cursing is bestemmia, right? Bestemma. And that's blasphemy.
Right.
So in Neapolitan, you could use dirty sexual words. That's not considered cursing. In the south of Italy, has a lot of curse word, a lot of blasphemy against God, the saints, Jesus Christ, Mary, people in anger. I mean, that's true. That happens.
Yeah.
So this guy does a routine, and it wasn't considered scandalous for sexual stuff. He curses saints.
Wow.
And it was so controversial that the priest in St. Lucie's in Newark, which covered that territory, put the creators under interdict.
Wow.
So they had to find out who they were. I've heard it. The Neapolitan is, and it's the Neapolitan of Avellino,
right,
that area of Avellino. But the funny thing to bring it up is that it's still in circulation. Certain
really?
People, yeah, because it was explosive. Because it's very, what's the word I'm looking for? The impersonation is exact, right? So it was actually a long playing album, I think, an LP. I don't know if it was a 78. I'm trying to remember. Some people have had it on cassette. They still have it at home.
Wow.
Some people have copies, but I don't know anyone who would understand those punchlines today.
Yeah, probably not.
Because, you know, he's cursing about the milkman. He starts cursing in Neapolitan about the milkman. I mean,
was the milkman a saint?
No, because in the Neapolitan would say, I don't even know how to say it without it. They would like, yells at this saint, yells at that saint, and God, it's hard to translate. And they have some curses in Avellino, which I wouldn't even touch with. I mean, they're blasphemous, like, on a different level. But the reason I'm saying is that I bet yet of all our listenership, you could count on a hand how many people would get.
Could even understand it.
Even understand, because he uses definitely non-PC ethnic comments. And I don't know where I'm going with this.
We got to find that. I, these kind of things, to me, should be preserved.
Well, anyway, make a long story, and I'll just wrap up the historical part, is that it was so scandalous that the pastor of St. Louis in North put an interdict. What does an interdict mean? It's like a high-level excommunication.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So if you had a copy, if you sold a copy, if you knew someone had, he put it under the whole parish until they found out who the actual guys were. Because one guy did all the characters.
I want to hear this.
But, you know, the one thing about it, it's rough. I mean, for me to say it's rough, it's rough.
Yeah.
He's the earliest Italian-American comedian that I know because he's American-born. And he says, I'm going to tell you about this story about Akumada. And then he goes strictly in Neapolitan for the rest of the album.
I would love to hear that. I'd love to find it. And if anybody on the audience has access to
I know
that,
where it is.
You do? We got to go. Or any of this stuff, because there's a lot of this stuff
out there. There's a copy of it in the church basement.
It might be, under lock and key in St. Lucie's. But this is the power of comedy to make us uncomfortable, to make us relate, to make us laugh, and to preserve a lot about who we are. It's a great insight into our history.
Because we're funny people.
Yeah, I hope so.
So funny.
We're very human.
We are.
Some of us.
I think
I've been described as human adjacent. But
I mean, if you asked,
like Alf,
besides San Gennaro, right, and Diego Maradona, the face of Naples is Totò.
Yeah.
Neapolitans, their face is a comedian.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
If you really want to understand the Neapolitan brand, you got to watch Totò.
Yeah, he's the key to everything down there. He really is. That's the mind, the humor. Totò is a
brilliant,
yeah,
absolutely.
You could do a documentary on that for sure. That's like,
and he did that song about Africa, right?
No, wait. I thought of a different song.
We got a real comedian
band.
Here.
Band. I do love that song. Actually, we did our karaoke night last week, and somebody had
you're
that. On the
you're
list.
Out. Can I tell you something about last week? I want to call you out now. I want to accuse you in front of all our listeners, because justice must be done.
What I do?
You love all those outfits,
yeah.
Like with the green. Tell everybody out there in podcast land the outfit that
I
you had
I told
on.
Them last week. I
Let's
green,
tell them again.
Green pants, my red blazer, tricolor tie, tricolor
right.
feast hat.
Right, and the tri and
glasses,
the glasses, right?
The shoes are
That's the Neapolitan in you.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Your fun side.
No
is
Sicilian
your,
would reduce
no,
themselves.
No, your fun side yeah. is your Neapolitan.
Yes,
side.
That's true.
And it's not your body side.
No.
No, your fun side is your Neapolitan side.
Like Totò.
So
it's
you
like
wouldn't,
Charlie
yeah,
Chaplin.
Sure, absolutely, because we are clowning people.
Yeah,
because we realize how ridiculous life is sometimes.
When we get humor and tragedy, I find the Italian people like in that spectrum.
Yeah,
like we show up at those extremes.
Yes,
most
very true.
And when you get into just kind of normal, like it's never just like I get very uncomfortable still if I'm just having like a straightforward conversation yeah. about like whatever, you know. It's like. If I'm doing business with people and I make a joke and they just kind of let it blow by and just kind of stick to, like I get extremely uncomfortable when I can't be humorous with
it. It's not human, right? That's the beauty of humanity. The comedy, the tragedy, the depths, the heights. That's what makes being human worthwhile.
As I was saying earlier, the last 2 weeks, and this is something a perspective of mine changed, and I want to share this with you and your listeners. I think it's though it's somewhat personal. But I've been looking after my mom for the last couple weeks, and I realize that I've been misattributing my funny to, like, all of the men, you know, my dad, my uncle, like, oh, yeah, my brother, like, and I've always, like, people's like, well, where does this come from? And after spending a couple weeks with my mom, I realized, like, no, she's hilarious. Like, you know, it's like nobody thinks their mom when they're a kid is...
Yeah.
funny, like yeah. they're the worst thing ever. But she's like, and to just see that, and she has no, I mean, she worked in the casino, and you know, there's no reason, it's a skill that's not marketable for
yeah.
her, right?
Yeah.
But she like, and I know a lot of people in our culture and in our neighborhoods who, they really do, like we always seem to look for the joke,
yeah.
right? Like, and that's a different way of brain function. You know, if people who are bent towards comedy or bent towards the joke, it's a different way of thinking. And I feel like most certainly, you know, Italian-Americans have that. And I think Italian-American women don't get enough credit
yeah.
for being just as funny as they are.
Yeah, we talked about all these comedians. We didn't talk about
Anne Bancroft.
Oh, Anne Bancroft.
Hilarious.
I love Anne Bancroft. I got to work with Lisa Lampanelli for a little time.
She's great.
Amazing
yeah, yeah.
stand-up comedy. You know, there's been a whole plethora of Italian-American women that have contributed incredibly.
And in the writer's room.
Yes.
You know, it's like, maybe there's not a you have to remember, like, the history of stand-up comedy. It was tough for women to break in until, you know, really the 80s. And even then, there was still a novelty for a handful. But when you go back through the annals, if you start looking through some of your favorite shows and you look through the writers, like, there was a lot of great.
Who was the one on Mary Tyler Moore?
Rosemary.
Rosemary.
Yeah, she's Italian-American. I have records of her singing in Italian. She was like a global superstar, too. She was a child star singer in the 20s. But yeah, she was Italian-American. And in the writer's room on that show, on the Dick Van Dyke show, not Mary Tyler.
Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah. That's something. Yeah, I knew what you were talking about. But yeah, that's Rosemary. And she only died a couple of years ago. Kay Ballard, another great like performer, comedian.
It's hard to tell because for so many years, they all kind of... You know, they all stage named out of an
yes,
Italian
true.
Name, so it's a real have to.
Yeah,
you have to know who they are to
you
know who
dig.
They are.
Yeah, you got to dig, but they're out there, and there's a lot of them. And I think it's a great area for us to focus some of our work and our research and some of the stuff we do.
Because we don't have enough to do. We just got all the free time that you and I have.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's a good effort for us to make because...
So aren't you buying a baby donkey?
No, I'm getting a donkey shipped in for my daughter's birthday party. But that's a whole other episode.
I think you're going to keep that donkey. You keep talking about the donkey.
Donkeys are great.
I'm tempted. Well, donkey brought us together.
They make great mortadella when the time comes.
You monster. You're a monster.
This is a very donkey-sensitive
person. What a noble way to go.
Petting the snout.
Hey,
gentle-eyed beast.
Nice mortadella. I like too much.
Meanwhile, you're at the back half with a piece of chalk.
Yeah,
we got this.
Yeah, we're going to make a nice mortadella. I'm very excited.
I would be that guy.
Joanna, when you don't want to know more, you call me. I'll come over.
Don't pet his shanks. We're trying to keep them tender.
Hey, nice.
If you're going to pet them, massage them, please.
Massage it nice.
Like a Kobe Bean.
Johnny's the juice. Forget about the meat.
Hey, kids.
It's beautiful.
Come to the petting zoo. Before you get started, dip your hands in
butter. Can you get revenge on Nicole with that and just tell her?
I'm keeping him and I'm making
him. Keeping the donkey.
Why not? I would love to have it. To me, donkey's like our national animal. I'd love to have one. That'd be very representative. But anyway, that's a whole other episode, and we're going to have the birthday party to look forward. A lot of fun stuff to look forward to, Pat, being honored as
Jersey City
Man of the Year.
The Man of the Year, Jersey City Columbus Day Parade.
I definitely think this is a great pursuit for us to take this wonderful field of comedy and to explore a bit more, explore the portrayals. And Brandon, thank you for coming up. You're welcome back anytime. We would love to have you back. We're honored. Yeah,
we're honored to have you come all the way up from God's country in Pennsylvania. Where is that? South Jersey.
Almost Pennsylvania. And I know Pat's going to do some work on your genealogy after we get off the mic. So
yeah, we're going to have fun with that.
That's going to be.
We should have guests and bring them to the towns of origin.
Yeah, we should. That'd be great.
It's another on our list of 8,000 things to keep saying. Yeah, we're going to do that.
50 years too late, we're going to build an Italian-American TV network. So this has been a lot of fun. Hope you guys have enjoyed what's ended up being two great episodes with the wonderful conversation with a dear friend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Da 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 da.